Good morning, Tri-States. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. We are listening to the Friday, December 4th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, brought to you in part by DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. And I'm your regular reader in the reader's seat, Ken, and we're ready to go with the first piece from Above the Fold. Restaurateurs ignore COVID-19 restriction. And we have a large picture of someone appears to be packing up a meal, and another one is getting one ready in the back of what would be a restaurant. And beneath that picture is the caption, Anna Dunlop and Devin Foley prepare orders at Cajun Jack's Bar and Grill in Elizabeth, Illinois, on Thursday. The eatery is among many in Joe Davies County that continue to serve customers inside despite COVID-19 restrictions. And our article, Joe Davies County Eateries Refuse to Shut Down, from Galena. On Thursday, Cajun Jack's Bar and Grill's inside dining area again was open for business. The restaurant served up its distinctive fare to customers and hosted its weekly shrimp boil. In advertising the latter, the business's Facebook page stated, "Call to carry out or eat here with us." The Elizabeth Eatery is among many in Joe Davies County that continue to serve customers inside, a violation of restrictions implemented early last month by Governor J.B. Pritzker in an effort to combat the spread of COVID-19 in the state. Jackie Jacobs, the owner of Cajun Jack's, said she decided to remain open as usual after she discussed the restrictions with the leaders of other local restaurants. "If we don't open to our customers, I'm worried we're not going to make it," she said. "We are doing everything we can to keep everyone safe." On Thursday, Illinois public health officials reported 10,959 newly confirmed cases of COVID-19 and a second consecutive day of near-record deaths. The 192 fatalities from COVID-19, the illness caused by the coronavirus, matched the toll from May 13th at the height of the initial wave of the disease in Illinois. That total is seconded only to the 238 reported Wednesday. Illinois has now reported 12,830 deaths among 759,562 coronavirus infections. Climbing case counts and positivity rates has prompted Pritzker to institute the restrictions aimed not only at restaurants and bars, but other businesses and gathering places. Despite restrictions from the state prohibiting indoor dining, many restaurants throughout Joe Davies County have remained open. "We've got mixed compliance with the mitigation," said County Public Health Administrator Sandra Schleicher. "We know there are businesses out there that are continuing indoor dining." Galena City Administrator Mark Moran said city officials have also received reports of restaurants remaining open. 2 weeks ago, he said, 10 restaurants were observed offering indoor dining. "It's a challenging issue," he said. "Even if we see restaurants that are open, it's not a local enforcement responsibility." East Dubuque Mayor Kirk Van Ostrand said many restaurants in his community also remain open, and the city has taken the approach of not trying to enforce the governor's restrictions. "These people just want to stay in business," he said. "Our community needs to have these people staying in business. We're not telling anybody that they have to shut down." Van Ostrand said he spoke with County State's Attorney John Hay on the matter, who reportedly informed him that local law enforcement was not liable to enforce the state-imposed restrictions. Hay did not return messages seeking comment for this story. Attempts have been made by officials to convince local restaurants to remain open. Moran said police officers have entered Galena restaurants on the weekend to inform them they are violating state restrictions. Schlaker said health department staff have reached out to individual businesses violating the order to educate them on the potential threat that restaurants pose in spreading COVID-19. However, she added that most restaurants have not changed course. It's not working well since we still have businesses that are not complying, Schlaker said. Usually, we get an, okay, thank you, talk to you later, and that's it. Schlaker stressed that indoor dining can spread COVID-19. She said she is concerned that the holiday season could bring another resurgence of cases in Joe Davies County. With the holidays, there are going to be more people wanting to go out, she said. Hopefully, the residents themselves can make the decision to not do that. Now we turn to our second front page piece, and above it we have a small inset picture of a man hefting and carrying a large mattress out of what appears to be a warehouse. And beneath it, the caption is, Greg Benish, with Four Oaks, carries a mattress from storage at Slumberland Furniture in Dubuque on Thursday. Slumberland and Four Oaks are partnering to give away mattress sets to families in need in the Dubuque area. The article is, Partnership Guarantees Families Can Rest Assured. On Thursday morning, a group of about 15 people gathered with winter coats and to-go coffee cups at the Slumberland loading dock in Dubuque. My daughter said to me, You look chipper this morning, said Four Oaks Regional Director Amy Kelleher. I said, Of course. It's bed day. Bed day refers to the annual Four Oaks holiday event of delivering free mattress sets to Dubuque area families in need, thanks to a long-standing partnership between the organization and the Dubuque Slumberland store. Four Oaks, a social service agency with programs aimed to assist area families, has helped deliver the sets for more than a decade. The group of volunteers spent Thursday morning loading up 30 twin and 10 full mattress sets, which included a mattress, box spring, and bed frame, into trucks to be delivered to predetermined addresses. Kelleher said the group was delivering mattresses to 8 families, while the rest would go to the Four Oaks office. While all the mattresses were spoken for, some sets will be delivered on later dates due to families needing to quarantine because of COVID-19. Being able to give families beds also gives the opportunity to sleep better at night, Kelleher said. Better sleep can lead to more energy to tackle a day, can improve brain health, and can increase a student's performance in school. People don't realize there are people in the community that don't have a bed, she said. But a bed is not a priority when you're trying to put food on the table. The mattress delivery also marks the only holiday-related activity that Four Oaks was able to do this year, Kelleher added, as all of the organization's other events have been canceled. Mark Jones, Dubuque Slumberland store manager, echoed Kelleher's statements on the importance of making sure families and children have beds. It means a lot to us that children have the security of having their own mattress today and the rest of their lives, and the parents then don't have to worry about it, he said. The Dubuque store's Four Oaks partnership goes along with the Slumberland franchise's Home for the Holidays event, during which stores across the country donate beds to families in need. They help us find the people who need it the most, Jones said of Four Oaks. They do so much besides this, but to us, this is a huge, huge thing. Four Oaks program coordinator Christy Fenwick said the organization's volunteers usually bring the mattress sets right into family homes so they don't have to struggle with the bulky items. However, COVID-19 safety precautions prompted a switch to leaving the sets outside of recipients' doors, and she said Four Oaks made sure to tell families to have someone on hand that could bring items inside. Each year, Fenwick said, Four Oaks reaches out to area families to see who is in high need of bedroom furniture. She watched several families over the years be brought to tears by the sight of a mattress coming toward their door. You never know if a family is recovering from homelessness or just got out of a domestic violence situation. They get these beds so they're not sleeping on the floor, she said. It's heartbreaking. They may not have any furniture at all, but they're trying to pay for food, rent, childcare. Also providing some muscle to load up trucks were members of New Life Church. Pastor Kyle Rains said the church got linked with Four Oaks after Kelleher saw their food drive for Iowans affected by the August derecho storm. Church officials had hoped to develop connections with organizations helping those in need, Rains said, and Four Oaks has deep roots in the community to reach those populations. I think COVID has compounded a sense of loss, he said, so it's good to be able to help with that. And now our final front page piece. Pandemic pushes county to alleviate overcrowding in jail. The inmate population in Dubuque County Jail is swelling, prompting concerns among administrators worried about another COVID-19 outbreak. The jail's population has been in the 150 inmate range in recent days, still well below its counts before the pandemic, but about 50% above its total in the spring, when concerted efforts of law enforcement and court officials reduced the population significantly. Jail Administrator Captain Mike Munster said the current counts are beyond what is considered manageable in the current COVID-19 era. 125 or less is what we want, and we can deal with it then, he said. When it gets above that, quarantining everyone goes out the window. Munster said the jail currently works to quarantine new inmates in order to prevent potential exposure of COVID-19 to the rest of the jail population. However, the current population has made it difficult to both quarantine and transfer inmates throughout the jail without the risk of exposure. Before the pandemic hit Iowa, the facility's population was about 190, but through the efforts of law enforcement and court officials, that number fell to 100 or lower by May. That represented the jail's lowest inmate count since at least 2006. The reduction was prompted by fears of a COVID-19 outbreak and what it would do in a very crowded facility. An outbreak took hold in the jail in June, with at least 29 inmates testing positive. Throughout the pandemic, jail staff have taken daily measures to disinfect the facility while working to keep inmates separated. Transfer areas are regularly wiped down by staff, while inmates also are asked to assist in disinfection, such as wiping down phones after use. Despite these efforts, the jail's primary problem remains a lack of space to properly house all inmates. Sheriff Joe Kennedy said local law enforcement currently follows a policy of keeping as many people out of going to jail as possible. Local departments are working with us on releasing as many misdemeanors as possible on citation, Kennedy said. If that person is considered dangerous, such as being charged with a sexual assault or something like that, then they need to be brought to jail. Instead of jailing people with misdemeanor charges, Kennedy said, would-be inmates instead are issued signature bonds and allowed to return home. In late August, the County Board of Supervisors approved the creation of a program that allows for house arrest with ankle monitoring for would-be nonviolent inmates. It was what we could do to reduce the jail population during the pandemic, said Supervisor Dave Baker. If there are people that can be sent home, then this is an option we have for monitoring them. Of the 12 ankle bracelets currently possessed by the county, 2 are in use. Munster said Sheriff's Department staff are hesitant to put too many inmates immediately on the new program. We wanted to start small and feel things out a little bit, he said. While the jail population did drop to manageable levels in the spring and summer, Kennedy said inmate counts in the jail have started to rise again. Reductions and delays regarding court proceedings and jury trials are playing a role in that rise, as the jail is holding potentially dangerous inmates for prolonged periods of time, the sheriff said. As long as courts remain closed, this isn't going to be relieved anytime soon, Kennedy said. We're at a point where we don't have enough corners of the building to put people. Kennedy added that he believes the jail has exhausted all of its options in keeping the jail population down. I don't know if there is anything else we can do to minimize this any more than we already have, he said. At the current population, Munster said, there is legitimate concern that a COVID-19 outbreak could occur again. While efforts are being made to prevent that from happening, the dormancy period of COVID-19 makes it challenging to determine who is and is not infected. There is no good way to it when we are in the tight confines that we are with the jail population that we have, Munster said. It's a big concern for us. Baker said the status of the jail likely will be discussed at the upcoming County Board of Supervisors meeting on Monday, December 7th. Now we turn to news from Dubuque and the tri-states. And topping the fold, we have our daily COVID announcements. These may be getting old, ladies and gentlemen, but, you know, we do need to pay attention to what is happening in our area, and this is probably the best way. So we have COVID-19 death toll continues to rise. The number of COVID-related deaths in the tri-state area increased by 4 between 5 p.m. Wednesday and 5 p.m. Thursday. Dubuque, Clayton, and Jackson counties in Iowa and Crawford County, Wisconsin, each reported one more COVID-related death in that 24-hour period. Dubuque County reported 68 additional COVID-19 cases from Wednesday to Thursday. The county's 14-day positivity rate dipped to 15%. There were 2,853 active cases in the county as of 5 p.m. Thursday, a decrease of 130 from the previous 24-hour period. Jackson County reported 29 more cases in addition to the new death. Its 14-day positivity rate is at 19.4%. Jones County reported 17 more cases, and its 14-day positivity rate dipped to 24%. As of Thursday afternoon, an outbreak at the Anamosa State Penitentiary was now down to 4 active inmate cases and 6 active staff cases. Delaware and Clayton counties each added 14 new cases. Their positivity rates were Delaware County 17.9%, Clayton 21.2%. The State Health Department had not updated county-level hospitalization data since Tuesday. As of then, Dubuque County had 40 residents with COVID-19 hospitalized. Also hospitalized were 13 infected Jones County residents, 14 from Clayton, 13 from Jackson, and 7 from Delaware County. The state continues to report outbreaks at 14 area long-term care facilities. As of 5 p.m. Wednesday, the case counts were Luther Manor Communities, Dubuque, 84, Shady Rest Care Center, Cascade, 20, Manor Care Health Services of Dubuque, 15, Dubuque Specialty Care, 10, an increase of 1, Hawkeye Care Center, Dubuque, 5, Bethany Home, Dubuque, 5 cases, Stonehill Care Center, Dubuque, 7, an increase of 1, Good Neighbor Home, Manchester, 82, Edgewood Convalescent Home, 9, Anamosa Care Center, 65 cases, Monticello Nursing and Rehab Center, 67, Great River Care Center in McGregor, 32, an increase of 1, Guttenberg Care Center, 42, an increase of 1, and Elkader Care Center, 9 cases. Iowa's statewide confirmed case count grew by 2,675 for a total of 237,482. The state's related death toll rose by 73 to 2,522. In Wisconsin, Grant County reported 33 additional cases on Thursday. Crawford County reported 24 more in addition to the added death. Lafayette County and Iowa County each reported 17 additional cases. Statewide, Wisconsin reported 4,618 new cases Thursday, pushing the total to 399,704. There were 82 additional related deaths reported, so the state's count moved to 3,502. In Illinois, Joe Davies County reported 14 new cases Tuesday with the two deaths. Statewide, Illinois reported 10,959 new confirmed cases reported Thursday, along with 192 additional deaths. That pushed the state's total to 759,562 cases and 12,830 deaths. Our next piece is also pandemic-related. Pandemic hinders blind society bingo. And we have an inset picture of people playing bingo, and they're all masked and they're all separated. Players mark their sheets Wednesday during bingo at Tri-State Independent Blind Society in Dubuque. The organization's popular fundraiser has struggled since the pandemic. And our article reads, since the Tri-State Independent Blind Society opened its 1068 Cedar Cross Road building in 2018, the nonprofit saw an average of 175 to 200 bingo players on game nights. Once the COVID-19 pandemic hit, Tri-State Blind had to close its doors to the public from March to June. But bingo nights, the nonprofit's biggest source of fundraising, have not seen as many people as needed since reopening. We're lucky if we get 100 people in here. We can't survive on that, Treasurer Amanda Meyer said. We got back afloat a little bit, but if things keep declining, then I don't know. Seating arrangements have been changed twice to keep social distancing in place, and only 172 chairs instead of the usual 200 to 300 are available, Myers said. According to Governor Kim Reynolds' COVID-19 mitigation measures released in November, places like bingo halls are required to ensure people stay 6 feet apart. Since the pandemic began, many of Tri-State Blind's usual bingo players are either too afraid of coming or don't attend because of mask requirements, Myers said. She added that many other bingo halls have closed their doors during the pandemic because they simply aren't making enough money to stay open. Masks and social distancing ruined us, said Debbie Gage, Tri-State Blind president. Gage added that sales at Tri-State Blind's bookstore, another big fundraising area, sometimes are so low throughout the day that they don't even cover the paycheck of the employee working in the store. We're way, way under from last year, Gage said. I'm hoping we don't have to close down. We help a lot of people, and there's no other place beside Des Moines to get help for the visually impaired in the area. While Tri-State Blind's Low Vision Center reopened in June to serve clients, Myers said house calls are no longer something they can do for health and safety reasons. However, she said clients they do interact with have been happy to have activities as the pandemic has prompted further isolation for some. It's just the little things that make them happy, she said. Several typical activities they do with clients, like taking them to see local plays and picnics, were canceled this year. And while the organization will still hold its annual Christmas dinner, she said there will be limits on who is invited in order to adhere to state gathering restrictions. We can't wait until this is all done and we can get back to some normalcy, Myers said. It's stressful for us, and it's stressful for our customers. Both Gage and Myers emphasized that Tri-State Blind makes sure to sanitize everything in the building between bingo nights on Wednesday, Fridays, and Saturdays. Though some clients have argued against having to wear a mask, prominent mask requirement signs cover the building. It can be very scary to be out in the public, but we try to tell people to wear a mask, she said. We're trying to do our best. You have to do your best to keep other people safe and healthy. Now we turn to our opinion page and our view, the Friday quick takes put together by the editorial board of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And looks like we're going to have one frowny kind of face and two smiley ones. We'll start out with the frowny one. Help assess public health needs by completing survey. Every 3 years, local providers team up with public health officials to assess the health care needs in Dubuque County. Never before has this assessment come amid a pandemic. That makes it all the more important to get increased participation from residents to truly determine where areas of need lie. Everyone must take the assessment survey and encourage others to do the same. We know COVID-19 has had an enormous impact on public health, but an accurate assessment can shed light on specific groups within the county that are more vulnerable. That can help direct health care providers and other stakeholders as they work to improve the health of the residents of Dubuque County. The detrimental impacts of COVID-19 are not just from the virus itself. Unemployment has led to heightened food insecurity. Isolation and other factors have contributed to mental health and addiction issues. While seldom has public health been more front and center, many people admit to not practicing good self-care during the pandemic. That's the kind of information that will help healthcare providers get an accurate assessment. Many questions in this year's survey are centered around identifying issues brought on by the pandemic, including how it has limited people's ability to access health care and groceries and see loved ones, as well as what Dubuque County's public health system may be lacking and the health care services that people want and currently do not have. The Community Health Needs Assessment Survey can be taken online, and I'll give this to you. It's a hard one, but it's https://bit.ly/36WUM O. I think I would go this way, a paper copy, and someone perhaps could help you if necessary. A paper copy also can be picked up at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center, 250 Mercy Drive in Dubuque, and returned to the same address. The deadline to complete the survey is December 17th, and I certainly would urge all of us to somehow fill out a survey to find out if we need other help around here. Our second piece, our second quick take, is a smiley face. An effort by Northeast Iowa Community College and Startup Dubuque is giving minority-owned businesses a helping hand through a tumultuous year. The program provided grant funding to 18 local minority-owned enterprises this fall. This important program comes at just the right time. It's hard enough for an entrepreneur to strike out on his or her own to make a go of a business. Being a minority business owner in Dubuque comes with added obstacles, mainly stemming from a lack of connection to the broader business community and the resources that come from knowing who to reach out to for help. Add in a devastating pandemic on top of those factors, and you have businesses struggling to survive. The grant money provided to a variety of businesses from different economic sectors was a shot in the arm that these businesses needed. Jay Wickham, director of Startup Dubuque, noted, "In this community, you have many legacy family-owned businesses that have been around for a long time, that people know very well and support. The question is, how do we support those business owners that are relatively new to the community who are trying to make Dubuque their home and their livelihood? That's something area patrons should ponder." One grant recipient said the message of support behind the grant program was as meaningful as the money itself. "A salute to NICC and Startup Dubuque for initiating this effort. Here's hoping area customers continue that support." And our third take, another smiley face. Even a pandemic cannot slow the good work of families impacted by the March of Dimes mission. The Carolyn and Michael Kelly family and the Jen and Eric Peters family have both been touched by the life-saving work of this nonprofit, and the families are co-chairs of the fall fundraising campaign for the Dubuque chapter of March of Dimes, a national nonprofit that supports the health of mothers and babies. The Kellys have raised close to $17,000 on their own and supported overall efforts to raise about $74,000 so far for the chapter's fall campaign. Jen and Eric Peters, also of Dubuque, have raised more than $17,000. Though the COVID-19 pandemic has thrown a wrench in the organization's usual fundraising plans, both families remain committed to its mission. If young families can make time to lead this important charge, then community should respond in kind. Donations to March of Dimes can be made online at signaturechefs.org/event/Dubuque. More information is available by emailing michaelkelly@healthcheck360.com. That was michaelkelly@healthcheck360.com. And we have two letters to the editor. Our first one, $45 million Elk Wind Farm upgrade unethical, from Terry McGovern, 197th Street, Earlville. Greenbacker Renewable Energy, the New York investment firm that now owns the industrial wind energy system near Greeley, suggests repowering all 17 wind turbines at a cost of $45 million. According to Greenback's representative, while the project is perfectly functional and capable of running 20 to 30 more years, there is also a lot of benefit of a repower in the 8 to 12 year range. There is nothing wrong with the turbines. The only ones benefiting in this case are the New York bankers. Iowans who care about the environment should be outraged at the blatant corporate greed. This repowering will result in over 900,000 pounds of turbine blades being dumped into a landfill where they will slowly leach their toxic chemicals into the earth for the next 1,000 years. The cost is a good example of how middle-class taxpayer money is transferred to the wealthy. The $45 million, they quote, will almost entirely be covered by federal and state renewable energy grants and tax credits, and the bankers will enjoy 11% guaranteed profits for an energy source that has been criticized by Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, Michael Moore, and climate expert Professor Michael Schellenberger as being inefficient, grossly expensive, with minimal impact on carbon reduction. Please contact the Delaware County supervisors and encourage them to disapprove this wasteful and ecologically damaging project, as it clearly does not represent the economic and environmental values of Iowans. And you may make that contact by supervisors@co.delaware.ia.us. That was supervisors@co.delaware.ia.us. And our second letter, Iowa must take action to clean up streams and creeks, from John Schroeder, University Avenue, Dubuque. For decades, Iowa commodity producers have had chance after chance to be better land stewards, and time and again, they have proven they are not up to the challenge. To assist with increasing water quality, there are voluntary cost-share programs, organic farming methods, no-till methods, easements, and state and private ecologists willing to assist producers to increase water quality. It is time to change the dynamic. This carrot approach has failed, and the pollution crisis has only gotten worse. In 2018, there had been a 50% increase in nutrient runoff, despite federal and state funding to reduce this number by voluntarily following water best management practices, according to a 2018 Des Moines Register article. Commodity producers across the board have failed to protect the water, the topsoil, and the surrounding ecosystem for future generations. Now is the time for radical solutions. I propose the following: 200-foot buffers on all creeks composed of prairie or woodland, and alternating prairie strips with crops every planter turn. A moratorium on farming and grazing on creek bottoms. If Iowans want to swim in creeks and lakes in the future, have creeks to fish in and fresh water to drink, or even topsoil, these actions must be taken as soon as possible. Since the voluntary carrot approach has failed, we must take the much less fun stick approach. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, and we are listening to the Friday, December 4th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, and I'm Ken, here reading, as I do every Friday, and we will now turn to today's obituaries. Michael P. Kelly, Dyersville. Michael Patrick Kelly was peacefully called home at the age of 67 on Tuesday, December 1st. He was surrounded by his family in the comfort of his home in Dyersville. Visitation, family and upon requests only, on Friday, December 4th, starting at 3 p.m. at Mike and Gloria's residence in Dyersville. If you would like to attend, please contact a family member to coordinate. Funeral in Latin, Saturday, December 5th, at 12:30 in the Basilica of St. Francis Xavier in Dyersville. Open to the public, please adhere to standard social distancing measures. This will be live streamed. Burial, family, and upon request only. If you would like to attend, please contact a family member to coordinate. A private luncheon will be held at Mike and Gloria's residence in Dyersville. I have a party scheduled in heaven, and I want everyone to be there. Mike was born November 15th, 1953, in New Hampton, Iowa, alongside his twin brother Pat, to Leo and Genevieve Kelly, as the fifth of eight children. Growing up, Mike observed the work ethic of his father and the Catholic faith of his mother, critical values that Mike heavily leaned into throughout his life. At a young age, Mike had great conviction and purpose. He prayed for four things: 1, to travel the world; 2, to have a large family; 3, to start a family business; and 4, to know truth. God's grace certainly poured over Mike throughout his life, and his prayers were answered. Mike graduated from the University of Northern Iowa. While attending, he met his wife, Gloria. Mike and Gloria married in 1976 and welcomed their first child the following year. Mike joined the Air Force in 1978, where he served as a C-130 navigator for 8 years. During this time, Mike and Gloria traveled around the world and were blessed with 4 more children. Mike left the military to start a new chapter. In 1986, he and 2 of his brothers started a technology business called Circle Computer Resources, CCR, in Cedar Rapids. Mike and Gloria welcomed their 6th child. Soon after, Mike rediscovered his Catholic faith. Mike moved his family to Dyersville to dwell in the shadows of the Basilica of St. Francis Xavier and to ensure Catholic education for his children. While in Dyersville, Mike and Gloria had 5 more children, whom he lovingly dubbed as the second batch. God fulfilled Mike's prayers in his perfect way while Mike's feet treaded on this earth. He saw the world while serving in the military, loved 11 children and 27 grandchildren and counting, built a successful business where many of his children work, and found as much truth as the human boundaries can comprehend, revealed through the Catholic faith. Given God's grace, Mike's final prayer has been fulfilled: to know truth in its totality while bathing in God's infinite love. Donations may be made to the5truths.org to promote the culture of life as designated by the family, currently not a 501c3. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.kramerfuneralhome.com. Cards and memorials may be sent to the Kelly family in care of Kramer Funeral Home, 750 12th Avenue Southwest, Dyersville, Iowa. Cheryl A. McDermott, Epworth. Cheryl Sherry Ann McDermott, resident of Epworth, passed away on December 2nd, surrounded by her family at Mercy One, Dubuque, Iowa. A private family visitation for Sherry will be held on Saturday, December 5th, at the Rife Funeral Home in Epworth. A private funeral mass in honor of Sherry's life will be held for immediate family at Holy Family New Mellory Church at 11 a.m. on Saturday, December 5th, with Reverend Monsignor Lyle Wilgenbush presiding. Public graveside services to follow at Holy Family New Mellory, rural Piasta. Social distancing guidelines will be in place at the graveside service. Sherry was born on August 21, 1951, to Emmett A. and Dorothy C. Potts McDermott of Bernard. Sherry was raised on the family farm with her six brothers. She cared for her parents and her brothers deeply and often spoke fondly of their childhood together. She was also very proud of her Irish heritage. Sherry graduated from St. Ambrose University in Davenport. She taught for the Western Dubuque School District for 38 years, primarily at the junior high school in Farley. While she was teaching, she earned her master's degree from the University of St. Mary in Leavenworth, Kansas. She thoroughly enjoyed teaching language arts, and she imparted her love of reading with passion for learning to her students. An avid reader herself, Sherry was a member of a book club in Dubuque through the River Lights Bookstore. She was also a member of the National Education Association, Iowa State Education Association, and Western Dubuque Education Association. Sherry also enjoyed music, her cats, gardening, and spending time with her family and friends. In lieu of flowers, anyone wanting to send memorials may send to Rife Funeral Home, attention, Cheryl McDermott Family, P.O. Box 250, Epworth, Iowa, 52045. Anna M. McCann. Anna M. McCann, 67, of Dubuque, died Monday, November 30th. Private family services will be held at Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street. Barbara L. Van Blarkum. Barbara Lee Massey Van Blarkum, age 81, of Dubuque, passed away at 9:10 p.m. November 30th at her home, surrounded by her loving family. To celebrate Barbara's life, family and friends may visit from 9 a.m. until 10:30 a.m. Saturday, December 5th, at the Church of the Resurrection, 4300 Asbury Road. Due to COVID-19 concerns, the number of people inside the building will be limited. All who attend will be required to wear a face covering and are asked to please maintain social distancing practices. To honor Barbara's life, funeral services will be held immediately following the visitation at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, December 5th, at the Church of the Resurrection, with Reverend Philip G. Gibbs officiating. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery. Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, is assisting the family. Barbara was born January 23, 1939, in Dubuque, daughter of Dale and Bernita Coonan Massey. Barbara was a proud, lifelong resident of Dubuque, who attended St. Patrick's Grade School and graduated from St. Joseph Academy. She was employed as a teacher's associate for the Dubuque Community School District for over 25 years, until her well-earned retirement. She was united in marriage to James Van Blarkum on September 14, 1957. They were blessed with 48 wonderful years of marriage and four children together before he sadly passed away January 6, 2006. Barbara was a faith-filled woman who was a longtime member of Holy Ghost Church and most recently the Church of the Resurrection. In her free time, she embraced her creative side. She worked on several types of crafting projects, with woodworking being her specialty. Barbara also enjoyed staying active and has made many friends while she was mall walking 6 days a week. She looked forward to the change of the seasons every year and enjoyed taking fall drives and getaways. She also looked forward to doing her Tuesday night running around, no matter the time of year. Everyone who knew her knew that Barbara loved her family more than anything. She looked forward to spending the holidays together, especially Christmas, when she would make her famous dirt cake, much to the grandkids' delight. Barbara was a great mom, grandma, great-grandma, and sister, and we will miss her tremendously. We do, however, take comfort in knowing that she is now reunited with all of her loved ones, especially her loving husband and son, in heaven for Christmas this year. Memorials will be accepted by the family to be distributed among her favorite charities, and may be mailed to Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, Dubuque, Iowa, 52001. Attention, Barbara Van Blarkum family. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.bearfuneralhome.com. Ellen H. Pierce, LaCrosse. Helen Pierce, affectionately known as Toots, entered into eternal life with Jesus on Wednesday, December 2nd. Eileen was born January 10th, 1931, in Dubuque to Ella and Edmund Tigges. Eileen was preceded in death by her loving husband, Arlen Ozzy Pierce, her parents, and three brothers. Visitation will be at 9 a.m., followed by Mass at 10 a.m. on Monday, December 7th, at Blessed Sacrament Church, 130 Lucy Boulevard South in La Crosse. Reverend Peter Raj will officiate. She will be laid to rest at the St. Joseph Mausoleum Catholic Cemetery, 519 Lucy Boulevard, La Crosse. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be sent to St. Jude's Children Research Hospital, 262 Danny Thomas's Place, Memphis, Tennessee, 38105. The Schumacher Kish Funeral and Cremation Services of La Crosse are in charge of arrangements. Online guestbook is available at www.schumacher-kish.com. Michael A. Bogie, Rockford. Michael A. Bogie, 57, passed away unexpectedly November 25th. Born on February 18th, 1963, he was son to Clyde and Joanne Miller Bogie. As a young man, he decided to write a book titled Union Park, A Place of Memories. This book was a source of pride for Mike and his family, and to this day is still quoted and referred to as a great source of local history. Always being drawn to helping people, he worked at Walgreens as a pharmacist for over 25 years. Upon retirement in 2018, he decided that his need to help people was unfulfilled and started work at UIC College of Pharmacy in Rockford as a compounding lab instructor. A man of wonderful personality, it was not hard for Mike to be friends with people. He had a beautiful, welcoming home and garden that he was proud of and loved to host many events in. It was always a good time. He enjoyed traveling whenever he could, both in the United States and internationally. There will be a walk-through visitation for Michael on Friday, December 4th, from 3 until 7 p.m. at Fitzgerald Funeral Home and Crematory, 1860 South Mulford Road, Rockford, 61108. Masks and social distancing will be required. In order to join virtually for a prayer at 6:45, please visit zoom.us with meeting ID 841-0353-1068 and passcode 123. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the family to establish at a later date or to any animal rescue of your choice. There will also be a celebration for Mike in 2021 in Dubuque. To send online condolences, please visit www.fitzgeraldfh.com. Gage J. Davidson, Platteville. Gage J. Davidson, 21, of Platteville, died Monday, November 30th, at home. A public visitation for friends and family will be held from 1 to 3:45 p.m. Saturday, December 5th, at Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Cuba City. Funeral services will be held at 4 p.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Services will be live-streamed through Facebook on the funeral home page. Family requests you utilize masks during the duration of your visit in the funeral home and practice social distancing. Gage was born March 7, 1999, in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin, the son of Jason Davidson and Jen Wapinski Weber. Gage graduated from Platteville High School and worked at L&M Manufacturing in Platteville. Gage loved skateboarding, making his own music, fishing, drawing, sewing, and animals, especially cats. He also loved spending time with his nieces and nephews and hanging out with the boys, brothers. Gage was very philosophical and asked through thought-provoking questions. He was preceded in death by his uncle. Online condolences for the family may be left at www.kcmcnet.com. Jeffrey K. Spahn. Jeffrey K. Spahn, Spahnke, 63, passed away Tuesday, December 1st, at University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. A visitation will be held from 2 to 7 p.m. Saturday at the Eaglehoff Siegert and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 JFK Road. Please keep in mind occupancy limitations as well as masks and social distancing requirements. Jeff was born July 10, 1957, in Dubuque, the son of John and Rita Kurth Spahn. He graduated from Wallard High School in 1976, then started working in the construction industry. After several years, Jeff left construction to begin his 38-year career as a bridge tender for the East Dubuque Railroad Bridge. On October 20, 1979, he married his love, Catherine Storer. In addition to working for the railroad, Jeff cut firewood and helped his son with his logging company. His grandchildren could not wait for Grandpa to give them ranger rides and tractor rides. Jeff loved the outdoors and enjoyed fishing, hunting, and taking care of his chickens and goats. He also enjoyed playing at the casino. A Jeff Spahn Memorial Fund has been established. Jonathan Steffens, Clearmont, Iowa. Jonathan Steffens, 30, of Clearmont, died Tuesday, December 1st at Gunderson Health in La Crosse. Visitation will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. today at Burnham Wood-Grau Funeral Home in West Union. Private family funeral will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, December 5th at West Clearmont Church. Graveside service will be at God's Acres in Clearmont. Schutte Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service is assisting the family. Brian T. Jansen, Lancaster. Brian T. Jansen, 46, of Lancaster, died on Tuesday, December 1st. There will be no visitation. A massive Christian burial will be held at 12:30 p.m. today at St. Clearmont Catholic Church in Lancaster. Private burial will be in St. Clement Cemetery. Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Lancaster is assisting the family. Betty J. Shetkin, Galena. Betty J. Shetkin, 73, of Galena, died on Tuesday, December 1st at Midwest Medical Center in Galena. Arrangements are pending at Furlong Funeral Chapel in Galena. Joanne M. McPoland. Joanne M. McPoland, 78, of Dubuque, died Thursday, November 3rd. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Sunday, December 6th at Hoffman-Schneider Kitchen Funeral Home, 3860 Asbury Road. A massive Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, December 7th, at Church of the Resurrection. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery. Dorothy E. Mum, Bloomington, Wisconsin. Dorothy E. Mum, 96, of Bloomington, died Tuesday, December 1st. A private family service will be held, and a celebration of life service may take place at a later date. Private family burial will be in St. Mary's Cemetery in Bloomington. Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Bloomington is assisting the family. Well, my friends, we had a lengthy number of passings, but in light of that, again, we remember all of our new arrivals, and we have a few, not a lot, but we have a few here. I mean, here are the births for today. Tuesday, December 1st, Cowder, Josh and Tiffany Cowder of Monticello, a boy, Unity Point Health, Findlay Hospital, Dubuque. McIntyre, Ellie McIntyre of Dubuque, a girl at Findlay. Wednesday, December 2nd, Wolf, Russ and Dana Wolf of Cascade, a boy at Findlay. Welcome to all you new babies, and may your lives be filled with a degree of happiness and fulfillment. We have just enough time for our weekend buzz, the noteworthy things to do this weekend, and it won't be a bad weekend at all. Jingle bright holiday lights today and Saturday, Delaware County Fairgrounds. It opens tonight, and then every Friday and Saturday through January 2nd from 6 to 9. A drive-through holiday light show. Admission cost is a free will donation. Hometown Friday nights. Today, Main Street, Platteville, 4 to 8 p.m. on Fridays in December. Businesses will be open for shopping, and there will be luminaries, roasted chestnuts, carolers, and holiday how-to workshops. Santa and Mrs. Claus will stop at Katie's Garden. For more information, you can call 608-348-8888. Drive-through visit with Santa, Saturday, C320 First Avenue East in Dyersville. 10 a.m. to noon, Santa and Mrs. Claus will be in the parking lot adjacent to James Kennedy Public Library to wave to kids and collect Christmas lists. Families can stay in their cars, and kids can put their lists in Santa's bag. A small, prepackaged treat will be handed out. All ages are welcome. More information, 563-875-8912. And we have, finally, Holiday Fire in the Sky, Saturday, Grant and Depot Parks in Galena. 6:30 to 7, the night sky will come alive with fireworks, rain or shine. For more information, 815-776-9200. And my dear listeners, this has been Ken reading for IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. And we have been listening to the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, Friday, December 4th edition. And until you hear from me again sometime next week, stay safe, keep your distance, be as healthy as you possibly can. So long.